Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown. Today, the Kraken, which I'm absolutely going to mispronounce Kraken throughout this episode because that's how I think it's pronounced, but I looked it up and it's Crack. And apparently. So let's jump in. The show, if you're new here, Katie's written me a script. I'm going to read it. We're going to explore it together. It starts with a poem. Let's go. Below the thunders of the upper deep, far, far beneath in the abysmal sea, his ancient, dreamless, uninvaded sleep, the Kraken sleepeth, faintest sunlights flee. About his shadowy sides, above him swell, huge sponges of millennial growth and height, and far away into the sickly light. From many a wondrous grot and secret cell, unnumbered and enormous polypi, winnow with giant arms, the slumbering green, there hath he lain for ages, and will lie, battening upon huge sea worms in his sleep, until the latter far shall heat the deep, then once by man and angel. Sorry. I drank a whole can of Coke before sitting down. Ah! Then once by man and angels to be seen, in roaring he shall rise, and on the surface die. This is... I don't understand poetry. I'm just like, what? Has anyone seen that movie, Patterson? Like, it's like the worst movie I've ever seen. And the poetry's so bad. And apparently it's written by, like, some big poet dude who people love. And I'm like, bro, it doesn't even rhyme. Like, and I know it's not about that, but it was truly bad. And the guy was a truly bad poet. And I know you're supposed to root for him. But I'm just like, dude, this sucks, bro. No wonder you're still a bus driver and no one likes your poetry. It's what you deserve. So that was maybe a bit harsh, but I hated that movie. I hope you did that poem justice, Simon. I don't think I did with that loud burp in minutes. But if you didn't, I'll take the blame, chucking you into an extra cold read like that. It's Alfred Lord Tennyson's The Kraken. By the way, it was published in 1830, so don't worry, it's in the public domain. I think you can read a poem, just a short... Oh, wait, it's a whole poem, isn't it? That could be an issue. But it's in the public. It's really old. It's really old. I think that would be fair use anyway, maybe. I don't think YouTube's going to claim that. In case you hadn't read, and Tennyson's very fucking dead. In case you hadn't realised yet, today we're going to get entangled in the many tentacles belonging to this sea monster, culminating with a question posed by a paleontology student which asks, did late Triassic, Triassic colloids actually have bicereal suckers? Oh my god, what was that sentence? Yes, viewers, we're going for a deep dive on this one in all senses of the world, so make sure those oxygen tanks are full and your mask is clear, because it's time to roll backwards off this boat. Scuba diving. Lots of scuba diving references there. Well, I'm not generally afraid of stuff, but the one thing that makes me, like, irrationally fearful is deep water. So I've never really been, like, keen to go scuba diving and stuff. Because you, like, even on a boat, if I look over the edge, all I can think about is that... And I know it's ridiculous. Is that I'm on a boat, and below me is just, like, unknown depths and things. And things that could just... There's no wall. It's just, like, whatever's down there could just swim towards me and get me. And it's also just weird thinking that you're not standing on anything solid, but you're so far above the ground. I don't know why. That really gets me. I'm not a big fan of deep water, so no, scuba diving, not for me. Let's get cracking. Sea monsters have been around for as long as people have been able to travel on the sea. Whether you're on a long-haul fishing trip, expedition, or whatever, there comes a point when you're far enough out on the water that you can't see anything but the sea. No land, no other boats, nothing but the vast expanse of whatever ocean you're on, stretching as far as you can see in all directions. Have you guys played that game? I can't remember what it's called. It's so addictive, and it's so fun.
You survive a plane crash and you're in the sea. It's a recent game, or relatively recent, last few years. And you're in the sea, and then you're on a life raft, and you got to paddle this life raft towards an island. And then you've got to, like, craft shit. So you're, like, making a camp. You're, like, making all this stuff. You eventually make, like, a boat. You have to go around all of these, like, shipwrecks and find stuff to, like, hopefully escape. And it's very compelling. And it's just the same thing. You're just, like, out on the ocean. And I'm like, I don't like how deep it is. And the sharks and stuff. Is there anything else that will give you such a horrible feeling of unease as that? I mean, yeah, there's loads of things that would make me feel more uneasy than that, because, like, you're on a boat. If I was in the water, I'd be way more uneasy. You can't see very far down. Anything could be under there. You don't know how deep it is, or what, or whether some awful toothy creature is speeding up like a bullet from the depths at that very second with its mouth open, ready to swallow your whole boat. No, I don't think that. If I was in the water, I think it's going to swallow my whole body, but I don't think it's going to swallow the whole boat. I mean, even if like a giant, like, fuck off blue whale or something, that's not gonna eat a boat. Boats are big and not food. What was that over there? An eel? Or just the end of a tentacle of something a lot bigger? Is there a huge bulbous cephalopod lurking mere feet below, or waiting to whip out its tentacles and destroy your vessel? Or will it just cruise by underneath without you even realizing how near death you were? With water covering 70% of our planet and at least 80% of this never having been explored, it's little wonder that the seas and oceans hold so much fear and folklore going far back, as humans do. Before we crack on with the main character of this episode, we do need to do a little bit of due diligence and go back and look at stories that predate what we collectively call the Kraken. Actually, quick aside here, Simon, have you been saying Kraken or Kraken or maybe even Kraken? Yeah, Kraken is what I would want to do, but it's Kraken, right? I looked it up before this. I don't think in this episode it particularly matters. Personally, I prefer Kraken, as it's easier to make jokes with. But I've already used up the best Kraken pun for the title of this section, and it wasn't very original. Yeah, if I was pronouncing it Kraken, it would be less effective. I'm glad that we're on the same page. Me, you, Katie, and Forvo. The pronunciation guide is Forvo.com. Forvo.com. You're welcome. It's kind of clunky, and it looks like it was made about 20 years ago. But it does what it says on the tin. It tells you how to pronounce words. Anyway, back to the story. Way before this particular sea monster was given a name, we had Scylla, Charybdis, popping up in Greek mythology and in Homer's Odyssey around the 8th century BC. Those were two sea monsters who lived on opposite sides of a channel, meaning that you'd have to choose to go nearer one than the other. Apparently the phrase between Scylla and Charybdis is synonymous with between a rock and a hard place, but probably only among the most dedicated classical scholarly types. I'm like, yep, that's something I've never said, but I'll often use between a rock and a hard place. I've seen Scylla described as basically having six dogs instead of legs and a normal head. If someone replaced my legs with dogs, I'd be like, oh, for God's sake, what happened to my legs? Now I've just got these two dogs attached to me. Be rubbish. But also having 12 feet and 6 heads on necks, like snakes. Dude, people who made up, like, mythology in the past were smoking crack, or whatever they smoked in the past, because, like, shit. It's like, what do you have? I have dogs for legs, and head is a serpent. Like, what the fuck? Charybdis is a little more straightforward, either causing or actually being a whirlpool that sucked boats down to their dooms. Other classical sea monsters of time past include Cetus, which was more whale-like, various Hydra, and the biblical sea serpent Leviathan. You may have noticed that none of these monsters really sound much like what we know as the Kraken today, which is generally represented as some sort of huge octopus or squid thing. I thought Kraken came from that dude. The dude who looks really weird, and wasn't he a bit racist? I mean, even for, like, I mean, it was the past, like, people were, like, racist, but, like, wasn't this guy, like, specially racist? The guy who wrote about the Kraken? He's dead, right? I hope he's dead. I mean, not like that. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe how bad of a racist was he? I mean, like, he's not gonna, I'm not defaming him, because he's dead. Oh, God, should we ask ChatGPT? Let's ask ChatGPT. ChatGPT doesn't connect. Don't let me down like this. It failed. Tap to retry. Let's close the app and try again. Don't do this to me, ChatGPT. I need you. Come on now. Oh, don't do this, ChatGPT. I need to know if the Kraken guys are racist. Ah, don't do this, ChatGPT! Okay, I guess we'll never know, because I'm not going to use Google like a peasant. This might be because even way back in the time of Aristotle in the 4th century BC, large squid were already recognized as being in existence, so the monsters didn't really resemble them as mythical monsters were usually mashups of different creatures or totally bizarre inventions such as dogs instead of legs, etc. Yeah, it's bizarre, dude. Crack smoking. This all changed over time, but we've jumped ahead a bit. So let's get back to our origin story of our sea monster. We'd probably get the name Kraken from Old Norse, as the thing first burst onto the sea in the Norwegian Sea, but definition-wise, I've seen things ranging from the arms, to malformed tree, to crawling, to anchor. Germans use the words Krak to both refer to the Kraken specifically and also just octopus in general, but to avoid confusion, they use the word octopus for the non-fictional creature. The Kraken was also supposedly called So Trolden, or Sea Mischief, which makes it sound like a naughty little troublemaker rather than a monstrous beast that crushed ships and ate people. It seems like the Norse people had lots of other monsters going on in the colder parts of the globe. There was also the Hafgufer, which translates to sea mist or steam, which has appeared in written accounts at least as early as the 13th century. This was a sea monster that hung around near Greenland and apparently self-chummed to attract fish. What does that mean? Self-chummed. Basically, this means it vomited out stuff into the sea as bait and then ate all the fish that came up to eat it. Oh, then those fish are going to go through a cycle, aren't they? It's like that Venus flytrap that eats flies, and then doesn't it use the rotting fly flesh to attract more flies? How fucked up are flies? Like, can you imagine, as a person, if you're just walking down the street, like, wow, that smells good. I should go eat that. And then you go into the building and it's just a dead person, like, rotting away. And you're like, why are flies like that? There was also the lingbacker, or heatherback, which was a monster so large and covered in vegetation that it was mistaken for an island. When sailors pitched up alongside and went for a walkabout on it, it would submerge and drown them all. That sounds real. These two monsters might just be elements of yet another enormous beast, which was called Aspidochelone. Definitely not pronouncing that right. I saw a video about this, and the presenter pronounced it like I spit a cologne. Okay, but I can't vouch for how correct this is. Appearing in the 2nd century, I like mine better. Aspichatalone. Ah, wow, it actually sounds quite similar to what this dude, I assumed, guessed. Appearing in the 2nd century text, Physiologus. This giant whale or turtle pretends to be an island to lure unwitting sailors, and it also attracts fish to it with a sweet smell. There are actually about a billion other sea monsters that we could talk about, but these seem to be the main ones in the formation of the Kraken legend. The Hafgufer and Lingbecker fell out of fashion over the years, people started conflating them, and eventually there could only be one monster to rule the sea, and it became known as the Kraken. God damn it, Kraken. By the mid-1700s, the Kraken had become an enormous tentacled thing that could destroy ships by wrapping its arms around them, but could also pull them under the water via a whirlpool when it submerged, like our old friends Charybdis. How these pronunciations, I know I'm just getting them horribly wrong, but I also don't care. How did it end up as a giant cephalopod when earlier monsters didn't really have these characteristics? Well, it's probably because as time went on and people sailed around more, they saw things that actually bore a resemblance to this creature, and thus the legends grew. Goodbye, whale with an island on its back. Hello, much larger version of a squid or octopus. It's also because starting in the 1700s, the Kraken started making its name via scientific journals and also from alleged actual encounters. This is one of those decoding the unknowns where it's not, obviously it's not like an actual Kraken or whatever. But there are giant squids, right? Squids, right? What are you talking about, Simon? There are giant squids, right? Because I feel like they found one, and then they had it's like that weird beak thing that they have. And then they also found like some big shits from a whale or whatever, and it had even bigger beaks from these squids inside. And so scientists were like, yeah, it's fucking massive squids down there. Which is kind of scary. Swedish biologist Carl Linnaeus, also known as the father of taxonomy or the slightly less catchy godfather of binomial nomenclature, for creating biological classifications for all known organisms, you know, the names like gorilla gorilla and rattus rattus, he started Systematurae in 1735, and guess what made an appearance in the first edition? The Kraken, classified as Sepia microcosmos, which comes in the cephalopod class under the genus of the cuttlefish.
Cuttlefish are like the least intimidated. It's like a little cuttlefish.
I don't actually know what a cuttlefish looks like. I think I've only ever seen cuttlefish shells on the beach, but they're small, and I don't imagine they belong to a particularly intimidating creature. Up to this point, I hadn't thought of cuttlefish at all, as they're quite small, although darn if they don't look like your archetypal kraken, a kind of mixture of a squid and an octopus. Wait, am I thinking of the same thing? Like cuttlefish. I'm just going to look this up real quick. Cuttlefish. Cuttlefish. Oh, Jesus. Is that what they look like? I imagine them more like a fish. Cuttlefish bone. Ah, it's a bone. Yeah, that's what I know. Oh, wow, you can get 10 cuttlefish bones for parakeets for £2. Wow, that's kind of a deal. Maybe I'll get some cuttle bones. What the fuck is this? What? What? The main thing that cuttlefish bones seem to be used for is feeding fucking parakeets. What is going on? Why do they want those specifically? Oh, wow. I've got one here for €1.50. Wow. Okay, enough about cuttlefish. The kraken also appeared in 1746's Fauna Svetica, with Linnaeus describing it as a singular monster, albeit one he admitted to never having actually seen. Not long after, it seems that Linnaeus realized the error of his ways and left the sea monster out of further editions of his work, but this early rubber stamping of the creature earned it a real place in history and also cemented the now common aesthetic of the monster as a cephalopod. In the 1750s, historian Erik Pontoppidan wrote his Attempts at Norway's Natural History, which again featured the kraken as a real creature. He described it as round, flat, and full of arms, and the longest and most surprising of all the animal creation. Pontoppidan gave various examples of what its classification could actually be, ranging from a type of octopus or starfish to a giant crab. Bro, when you said, like, attempts at Norway's natural history, you really were just making an attempt, weren't you? Because you're just making shit up, bro. You're like, well, it could be an octopus or it could be a giant crab. I've never seen one. No one knows if it's actually real, but it could be any of these things. Yeah, yeah, it could also be a fucking kettle, but it's probably not. He also, I don't know where kettle came from, why I chose kettle. I'm not even looking at a kettle. What a weird thing to say. He also said it was so big it could be mistaken for a mountain when rising out of the sea, and that it had a circumference of 2.5 kilometers. Although I don't know if that was the body by itself or when it had all of its arms outstretched. Well, whatever it is, it's ridiculous, bro. You're just making shit up. It might also be worth pointing out here that Pontoppidan seemed to be really into sea lore, also featuring giant sea serpents and mermaids in his natural history, so bless him. Yeah, bro, you made an attempt, didn't you? You had a crack at it, some might say. The 1800s brought many unsubstantiated tales of encounters with the beast, and paintings, woodcuts, and engravings started solidifying the current recognizable form of the kraken. There were stories of how to tell if a kraken was nearby. If your boat is a couple of miles out on a hot day over a particularly deep part of the sea, all the fish in the area would be pushed to the surface as the kraken started rising. Rumor has it that some fishermen actively tried to find the kraken, as if they could get away in time, the amount of fish they would catch would be worth the risk. Tennyson wrote the poem that we started with in 1830, and in 1833, William Jardine published The Naturalist's Library, featuring a chapter on the kraken, which includes this bit. The belief in this monster is, however, universal among the sailors and fishermen of the Norwegian coast, and it has been alluded to by all the Scandinavian writers from the earliest period down to the present day. He quotes tales of the kraken from Pontoppidan's writings before, saying, probably without much difficulty, this extraordinary kraken may be identified with certain species of sepia or cuttlefish, which have been described in the annals of science. Bro, this is like you going on the internet and just finding a fact that someone has written on a website and then writing it down as well and being like, fact substantiated. And the problem is then you get like two places that are saying this fact is true, even though they're just all copying each other, and it often gets it wrong. It's, this was like the misinformation before there was the internet. Amazing. Jardine then quotes someone who had seen a massive cuttlefish, but I don't think they get that large, so maybe this person had actually seen a giant squid. He goes on to list several examples of ships and humans being attacked by massive arms or tentacular, and also sightings of the kraken by different people all over the world. This chapter ends by saying, long quote here, the great Norwegian animal thus named is to be considered not as a wild and groundless chimera, but as either identical with or nearly allied to the colossal cuttlefish. It must be confessed that many of the accounts to which we have referred, if considered singly, are much too vague and identifiable to form the foundation of any opinion. but it is the general import and tendency of the whole combines which should be considered. In this view, it would be contrary to an enlightened philosophy to reject as spurious the history of an animal, the existence of which is rendered so probable by evidence deduced from the prevailing belief of different tribes of mankind, whose opinions it is evident. Oh my god, get to the point! Writers in the past, you're getting paid by the fucking words! Good lord, be more wordy! It is evident it could not have been influenced or affected by the tradition of each other, but must have resulted in the occasional appearance of the monster itself in different quarters of the globe. Okay, so basically, in that enormously wordy thing, what he's trying to say in like one sentence is, I think the Kraken's real because loads of people have seen it, even though it's not really confirmed. Boom! Done. Why couldn't you write that? As well as saying the Kraken might actually exist, albeit as a natural creature, Pontopedian and Jardine put into print many alleged examples of the creature attacking ships, grabbing and killing sailors, and creating whirlpools to drag its hapless victims to their deaths. In 1851, Herman Melville name-checks it in Moby Dick, although it's a skeptical reference, saying, quote, there seems some ground to imagine that the great Kraken of Bishop whatever his name is, may ultimately resolve itself into squid. The manner in which the bishop describes it as alternately rising and sinking, with some other particulars he narrates. In all this, the two corresponds, but much abatement is necessary with respect to the incredible bulk he assigns it. What a logical approach we have there. I mean, yes. Also, it's like so hard to read. Like, okay, I don't know. So he's like, I don't even know what he's saying. Reading things from the past is so hard. Like, it's so hard. What are you saying? I've tried reading books. Like, I tried reading the Count of Monte Cristo, which is apparently amazing. And I'm just reading it and I'm like, oh yeah, but the old language, it's like hard work. And all I do all day is read. And then it's just like to read something hard as like for fiction in the evening is really hard. You're just like, oh, I don't want to read this. I just want to read something easy. In 1861, a small French warship called Alecton had one of the first recorded encounters with a real-life giant squid. While there had been anecdotal stories about them before, the general scientific consensus of this period was that they didn't actually exist. This is slightly confusing, as the Kraken had been listed as an existing creature 100 years before, but a large squid was not thought of as being such a viable creature? Well, apparently not. The crew tried to capture the squid, but it was too heavy to be pulled aboard, and all they were left with was the end of what they called the tail, which I assume to be the top fin part, not the end of an arm. This part by itself allegedly weighed about 14 kilograms or 30 pounds, which is about twice the weight of a bowling ball or one-third the weight of a toilet. Apparently, it was sent off for study, but it seems to have gotten lost in almost immediately. This thrust the idea of the Kraken back into the public consciousness, especially in the world of literature. So we are now awash with Krakens popping up in pieces by Victor Hugo, Jules Verne, and John Wyndham. Cthulhu, right? H.P. Lovecraft! That's the guy I was wondering if he's a racist. Yo, ChatGPT, you back? No, ChatGPT's not back. ChatGPT, don't do this to me. I know you're very busy because everyone loves you, but we need to talk. ChatGPT! Never mind, fuck you. I just wanted to talk. We're supposed to be friends. Nowadays, the monster's tentacles are spread all over the entertainment sphere, with appearances in Clash of the Titans, where it has erroneously been inserted into Greek mythology, a couple of Pirates of the Caribbean films, and a 2023 animated film called Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, which sounds like it should rhyme, but it doesn't. I don't like these movies. Like, Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm just like, no. I think I saw the first one, and I was already no, and then they made like 900 more, and I'm like, I'm just pretty out on all of that shit. Clash of the Titans, I don't even know what that is, but it sounds like it's going to be some like weird semi-fantasy history thing, which I'm going to hate. House Greyjoy from Game of Thrones, another TV show that I've never seen. I've tried to get into Game of Thrones, I can't do it. I've watched the first episode twice, and I'm just like, no. And people are always like, you have to get into it for a few episodes, and I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to. It's just too much work. There's so much good TV already. Has a Kraken as their sigil, and it made a brief appearance on the TV show Our Flag Means Death, which also features the world's hottest Blackbeard. It had been a fixture in video games and tabletop gaming for decades, and in 2021 an ice hockey team was founded called the Seattle Kraken. So right, I think we're up to date with the history of this thing, so now it's time to talk cephalopods. Octopi Wall Street. Ah. Whatever people thought the Kraken was or wasn't, it's now commonly perceived to be a giant cephalopod of some sort. The common characteristics of cephalopods are that they are marine animals with definite heads and tentacles, or arms and the ability to squirt ink. Obviously, octopi, squid, and cuttlefish are classed as cephalopods, and so is the Nautilus. But we can count that one out as it has a shell, and no mention of the Kraken has said it was actually in a huge shell the entire time. We're going to talk about the differences between octopuses and squid for a moment, even though I think that discussion is moot, as the Kraken is a legend and not actually a real creature, so it doesn't matter whether it's more like an octopus or a squid, as it doesn't exist. Well said. Anyway, early illustrations of the Kraken in its familiar cephalopod form definitely skew octopus for me. Many of the pictures show tentacles or arms coming out of the sea and wrapping around a boat, with the monster's two large eyes and a bit of its head slash body showing. This gives the impression that the head is more rounded like the octopus and not elongated with a triangular end like the squid. Also, the arms all seem more or less of the same length and covered in suckers. As well as having eight arms, squid also have two longer tentacles with suckers just on the ends, not all the way along. Actually, some squid have really creepy looking barbs and hooks on the ends of their tentacles that can swivel about to keep hold of their prey. Obviously, nowadays, anything goes, with the Kraken being depicted however you want, as long as there are tentacles involved somewhere. By the way, I have been throwing out arms and tentacles somewhat interchangeably, although I know there technically is a difference, with arms having the suction cups all over them and tentacles only having them at the ends. Well, what do you know? There. You found something out today, didn't you? Thus, an octopus has no tentacles, but does have eight arms. But you know what? When we're talking specifically about the Kraken, I think we can use whichever one we feel like, and if you don't agree, please refer to the previous point about it not being real. The early drawings of the Kraken may look more like octopuses because everyone knew octopuses existed. They don't live as deep down as larger squid, and even now they're viewed as extremely weird creatures, so it'd be easy to model a many-armed monster on one of these. When the existence of things like giant squid became known later in the 19th century, however, it seemed more likely that the Kraken myth was based on these guys, as they can grow much larger than the largest octopus. I will ask you a question. Here are some squid facts. We know there are little squid and giant squid. The largest giant squid are mysterious animals that live hundreds of meters down in oceans across the globe, where humans just can't go because they live way down deep. They're the products of the amazingly named abyssal gigantism, where invertebrates can grow massive compared to their relatives living in shallower waters. Which kind of seems counterintuitive, right? Because you're like, isn't there loads of pressure down there? So you'd be like, wouldn't that make them like small? But apparently not. I'm sure there's a good reason. While some had washed up or come to the surface in the past, a few strandings occurred in New Zealand and around Newfoundland in the 1870s and 1880s, bringing the possible monster firmly into the realm of reality. The giant squid was also finally officially classified as Architethus dux in 1857 by Norwegian naturalist Japeter Steenstrup. It wasn't until 2004 that we had any photos of a living giant squid in its deep natural habitat, so it's no wonder that scientists in the past undernarred over whether it was real or not. And if a giant squid was real, why not something even larger? Well, if you weren't already aware, there is something even larger than the giant squid in the cold depths of the ocean, and that is, drumroll please, the colossal squid. Oh, I didn't know. I kind of thought giant squid and colossal squid must be the same thing, but I realized colossal squid's probably the new one that, you know, wasn't discovered back in the 1800s. Well, their bodies are much larger, longer, and heavier, but their tentacles don't grow quite as long as the giant squid. It is massive, though, with one found in New Zealand weighing almost twice as much as a giant squid at 490 kilograms to the puny 275 kilograms that a giant squid can grow to. It also has a massive beak, much larger than the giant squid's, and those things are sharp. Lengthwise, though, there's not much competition, or at least not yet. As with most things that go on in the murky depths of the world's oceans, we just don't know that much about the colossal squid. Here's what John Abbott, the senior curator in charge of mollusks at the Natural History Museum, had to say about this. Although we don't know everything that's in the deep, most scientists now believe that female giant squid reach around 13 meters long and males around 10 meters. In case of the colossal squid, the jury is out. The biggest one found to date was around 9 meters long, but it wasn't fully mature. Some scientists believe they don't get as big as giant squid and never reach 13 meters, while others think they could grow even bigger to 18 meters. An 18-meter, or 60-foot-long squid, is no joke. That's 12 Danny DeVitos laid end-to-end in the water beside you. It's terrifying, isn't it? In case you've been wondering how big octopuses get, you're going to be disappointed. The largest species of octopus is the giant Pacific octopus. And while the average length from top to tip is quite impressive at about 5 meters, this is less than half the length that a giant squid can get up to. We can be fairly sure that sightings of a giant squid, or possibly even a colossal one, are what gave the Kraken rumors legs, or rather arms. But what if it's aggressive behavior? Could a squid really attack a boat? This is fairly unlikely, as the giant squid is built to be a deep sea dweller and only comes to the surface if it's dead or dying. It's possible that one was still alive to fling a tentacle or arm over a small boat at some point, but this would have not been an attempt to crush the boat or as a precursor to picking up individual crew members. It would have just been something to hold onto. The muscles in the squid's tentacles aren't strong enough to wrap around and constrict or crush anything. They mostly just dangle down in the depths waiting for prey to come along. We've heard of epic battles between giant squid and sperm whales, but the squid aren't the aggressors here. They're not engaging in arm-to-mouth combat with the whales to see who will win. They're just trying to get away. I think we're all pretty much convinced that any tales of the Kraken, at least from the past couple of hundred years, have just been tall tales spun from an encounter with a squid that was much larger than anyone would have been expecting. But what if there actually was something even more enormous in the past? We know that there were huge examples of modern-day animals like the giant ground sloth and giant beaver way back in the Ice Age, and the megalodon was about three times the size of current great whites. So could there have been another deep-sea titan ruling the waves? Release the Triassic Kraken. Kraken! God damn it! Since 2011, paleontologist Mark McMenamin... Dude, could you have more M's in your name if you tried? There's four M's in your name. One, two, three. And it's not even long. So 4M has been putting forth a theory about a huge cephalopod that was killing ichthyosaurs about 250 million years ago. Considering the size of the prey and the remains of a fossilized beak he found in 2013, the ancient sea monster would have reached about 30 meters, 100 feet, or twice the length of your largest giant squid these days. And what evidence has he found? Well, apparently there are fossilized remains of ichthyosaurs, such as the very large Shonisaurus popularis, where the vertebrae have been moved around and placed into neat patterned rows, resembling a double row of suction cups that you'd find on the underside of an octopus's arm. That is fucking creepy. Why is it just sucking on the vertebrae? This also mimics known behavior of squid, and especially octopuses that are highly intelligent and can manipulate objects in this way. But why? What do you want with my spine? Why is that what you want? This was only one example, but old 4M also saw a photo of a now-removed museum display that was set out exactly as the skeleton had originally been found. There was another row of removed vertebrae in the same formation laid to one side of the main skeleton. 4M said, "We think one plausible explanation of this is an attack on the ichthyosaur by a much larger predator." He also believes that the formation of these vertebrae to look like a double row of suckers is intentional, a cephalopod's calling card, if you will, or even something of a self-portrait. I mean, okay, I get they're smart, but are they that smart? It seems a bit unrealistic. It seems more just they were like sucking on those bones, and then they just laid them down. The website, GreekGodsAndGoddesses.net, okay then, also chimes in with, quote, "These bones look like gigantic octopus gills. Since the ichthyosaur grew to be up to 66 feet long, an octopus would have to be very large indeed to hunt and eat one. Scientists even found one ichthyosaur skeleton with a rib cage cracked from constriction. It was as if a large tentacle had been wrapped around the ichthyosaur, crushing it and dragging it down. For this to be possible, a very large octopus must have really existed at one time." Add to this the large beak 4M found in the same state park as the first skeleton, and some tentacles are starting to twitch in the direction of a monstrous octopus. Or maybe the tentacles are twitching, but the creature is no longer alive, as this theory is not supported by anyone else, apparently, in the entire world. So it did get peer reviewed, did it? A blog about this by Tyler Greenfield, who was a paleontology student at the time, clearly sets out how, thanks to what we know about marine life in the Triassic period and what we know about the evolution of cephalopods, that this monster thing is just impossible. This brings us back to his burning question at the top of the episode. Did late Triassic coleoids actually have biserial suckers? What he's asking is if these types of cephalopods had double rows of suckers at this time in the past, and the answer is a resounding no. They only had uniserial suckers. So this puts paid to the idea that the ginormopus was leaving a picture of himself made out of vertebrae of other animals. Greenfield also points out that the only evidence we have of Triassic period coleoids are all less than a meter long. So are there any other explanations for how these neatly arranged vertebrae formations could have occurred? Well, yes, of course there are. How about just the currents buffeting the bones together as the rest of the skeleton decayed? How about just random chance, as there have only been two examples of this found so far? David Fostovsky, paleontologist who sat through one of 4M's presentations, states, "A kraken isn't really necessary. Everything can be explained by much less exotic means." Ah, yes. Old Fostovsky there, a fan of Occam's razor. The simplest solution, usually the right one. And old 4M's like, "Nah, giant, colossal, turbo, dinosaur squid." Kind of a killjoy, but he's not wrong. The fossilized beak wasn't much in the way of conclusive evidence either, as it wasn't complete and could really have been anything. Even if it was a part of the beak, there wasn't enough of it left to be able to extrapolate the size of a cephalopod out to 30 meters. Just squidding, why this can't be real. While the sea is vast and unknowable, and even the largest vessels are nothing more than dots on its surface, with the combined knowledge we have of fossils, animal biology, and real-life specimens, or lack thereof, it's safe to conclude that there is no such thing as the kraken in a 30-meter-plus form that consciously attacks boats for fun. Sailors who might have been feeling a little on edge being out in the middle of nowhere probably saw a large cephalopod, which might have even attached itself to their boat, and their imaginations inflated the encounter when they got back to shore. This would mean more people on the lookout for the kraken, and therefore more sightings, whether based on something real or not. Might there be even larger species of squid or octopus that we don't know about? Well, maybe, but it's unlikely they're going to be more than twice the size of what we've currently got. Why? Why? The ocean's real big. There could be all sorts of weird shit down there. I don't believe like there's an actual kraken like drowning boats and stuff, but I do believe there could be some like big ass shit down there that we don't know about. Didn't we say like 80% of it's unexplored? Who knows what's down there? The main mystery for me here is why the ancient Greeks and Romans recorded the giant squid as a real animal, and then it fell into the realm of legend for centuries before being recognized again in the 1850s. Pliny the Elder, a 1st century AD Roman naturalist and author, wrote a book about a squid measuring more than 9 meters with a body like a barrel in his work Natural History, and Aristotle had mentioned it even earlier in Historias Animalium. Although not quite such a gigantic specimen. I suppose the giant squid's elusiveness doesn't help, and it was probably only when countries started exploring further across the oceans that the chances of seeing one increased. There also haven't been any modern-day kraken sightings. And we have to keep going back to the same boring point as we do for all cryptids and monsters. Are there just one or two that live for thousands or even millions of years, or are there enough of these things to maintain a breeding population? Neither seems very likely, so I think we can leave this beast in the story where it belongs. I mentioned to my daughter that I was doing an episode on the kraken, and she said, "The kraken isn't real, it's just a giant squid. You don't have to do a whole decoding the unknown about it." Well, the joke's on you, because we just did. Yes, we did, and I hope you liked it. If you did, leave a review for this show wherever you get it, or a rating on Spotify. It's also available as a video podcast. Hello there, video watchers. Like and subscribe, and I'll see you next time.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.